Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thank you for joining us. Once again, we're joined by the team of experts at the Norris Group. Craig Hill is here, Andrea Jennings, and Greg Norris. And what we'd like to do today is just give you an idea of what we're seeing in the marketplace and what we intend to do maybe in 2008 to make a profit. Craig, just recently we began to see the reemergence of the ballroom auctions and the successful wholesale deals that come from there. As a lender, how is funding a deal that comes from a lender-owned property maybe a cleaner or easier deal?
Yeah, one of the nice things about with the lender-owned properties is you're pretty much guaranteed a clean title. So in years past, when you're dealing with private parties, one of the problems is you really don't know if you have a deal until you see if they've maybe left out some information that they already had a second or this or that. But when you're dealing with lender-owned properties, for the most part, you know you're going to get a clean title and it's a smooth transaction. One of the downsides with the lender-owned properties is with the auctions and things, they seem to have so many properties that it really delays the process. And in a market like this, as we've talked in the last segment, I mean, that can change your estimate of value if they take too long.
So I see what you're saying.
That's one of the negatives, but it is a nice, smooth transaction.
Well, one of the positive things, too, is then you're really not rushed to close. I mean, that's
absolutely.
It's very rare that the lender can respond inside of 10 days to close an auction house.
Yeah, usually I'm calling the escrow just saying we're ready to go, and We're kind of waiting on them.
So it's easier for the lending business because you kind of line up things in a more more efficient.
Yeah, it's not trying to run around closing everything in 7 or 10 days, which is typical of when you're dealing with the private party, because they usually want their money for a specific reason and they want it right now.
Right, and that could cause fallouts for that reason too. You could
exactly
be 2 days late with a private party and you'd probably have a cancellation.
Right.
Where it's really doubtful you'll be getting too many cancellations from an auction purchase.
Absolutely.
During the cycle of the 90s, the auctions, I mean, I started attending them where there was lender-owned properties. It started with the new builders, which typically didn't make too much sense. Then it went to the mixed inventory and then to the HUD auctions. But during the 90s, when we were funding a lot of deals, what percentage would you say came from the actual auctions themselves, the HUD auctions or any of the other auctions, what do you think?
I would say a large percentage, maybe as much as 80%.
Okay.
Came from the auctions.
Wow.
Because it just seemed like with us working together, I mean, there'd be 4 or 5 deals at a time.
For me, absolutely.
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then I might get one here or there, but with the HUD auctions, mainly it was the HUD auctions, I think, last time.
Right. They were the subprime lender of the 90s, basically.
Exactly. And it just seemed like a large majority of the business was from the HUD auctions and other auctions.
A lot of times people, when they get started, I know it's sometimes typical where you get a phone call where someone's excited and they got their first deal, and then you find out that it's got a foundation issue and all that. What's the necessity of taking on those gigantic projects in a market that we're into now?
Well, one thing I tell, because so many beginners call, and that's the first house they find.
Mm-hmm.
And what I usually tell them is, if you're a beginner and you found this house with the foundation problem and this and that, you have to realize there's probably 100 other investors that are more experienced than you that have passed on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just tell them this is a market where it's not necessary to do that. Unless somebody has like a construction background and that's what they do, I pretty much, even at any price, I tell them not to do it because it's just not necessary in this market.
We've already seen some success with people that we've taught attending auctions and bringing properties for you to loan on.
Yes.
Typically, what's been the repairs that have been common in those properties?
Well, with this run in the auctions, at least starting out, the majority of houses I received this last 30 days have been all like 2000, built in the year 2000s, and tile roofs, maybe paint and carpet, just really nice houses. And I think that's important because, once again, we've talked about the validity of the market. You can get those back on the market very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I am seeing people turn over those houses. I mean, we've made some loans in the last, say, 60 days, and people have been able to sell them if they price them right.
borrowing money and attending auctions and also making offers on lender properties usually requires a credit letter. Can you take me through the process that you want to see, you know, when somebody comes and says, I'd like to get a letter?
Yeah, when somebody comes for a credit letter, basically I'm gonna look at credit to some degree. Not like a normal lender would. I don't have a certain number. I know there's a lot of magic numbers out there, but I just kind of look at credit. One negative factor might be if somebody had, let's say, $100,000 worth of credit cards available, and they had $99,000 worth of credit cards debts.
Okay.
So I would look at that more than any number, let's say.
You really want to have some room for somebody to be able to absorb a surprise that this business can toss out.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. I will look to some degree at ability to repay, but a lot of these people are just investors, so you know, income isn't necessarily a steady stream. So that leads me to the most important thing, and one thing that people just, they always ask this question, but they think they can do the business with no money down.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be possible. Well, it's certainly possible to buy a house with no money down.
Right.
But I don't know if you can make a profit consistently doing that. I mean, sometimes you just have to have cash available. So the way I work is I look at savings, cash, home equity lines, credit cards to some degree. A lot of people might be working with a brother or somebody that has funds. So it's really pretty liberal with how they have the cash.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kind of ask them, like, okay, if you had to write a check in 3 days, how much could you write a check for?
Okay.
Because I don't care really where they get it, like a normal bank with seasoning or something like that. I just want to know that if we go through all the effort of getting a deal, that they're able to perform.
If someone can't get that credit letter on their own, what are some of the things that you've seen them do that's acceptable to you to get a partner or, you know, whatever?
Yeah, if they want to work with somebody, that's probably the most common thing.
Okay.
I usually throw that thing out. Do you have a friend or somebody that's interested in doing it that has the money but maybe doesn't want to do all the work? A lot of people, I'll tell them I can work on a case-by-case basis, but I really encourage them to go out and get to be a more stronger buying entity than looking for that perfect deal.
Is there any credence attached to a credit letter from us in the eyes of, let's say, a REO agent, to where when they see it, they actually think, hey, that's probably true?
Yeah, I think we're going to be building into that. I know in the last cycle, we've talked about this story before, but I actually had a buyer who I didn't know call me because the agent said that if he could get a letter from myself or our company, that he would go ahead and do the deal. So that's something that's built up over time, is when you get credibility in closed deals, it makes it so much easier to get the second or third deal.
We've heard a lot in the last 6 months about the bulk buys.
Yes.
Everybody wanting a $5 million credit
yes.
letter, and as of yet, I don't know that we funded one.
No. I mean, that was pretty much, I could assure myself over the last say 90 days, I'd have five people a week at least call me with requesting a $5 million bulk buy deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was a chicken and an egg scenario. I mean, I hadn't seen anything really realistic. I've talked to other investors who I know are looking. And to my knowledge, there's really, at least in our community, there hasn't been really one bulk buy from an investor just for a $5 million like hand-picked deal.
Right.
Hand-picked bulk buy.
Yeah, they seem to go through a progression where they were told that there was a list, and if they filled out all the paperwork, they'd get to see the list, and then they would even customize the list. And there was,
right.
I think the word is assemblers,
right.
where they were going to customize a list. And then ultimately, in one of the people that really pursued it to a great extent, when it came right down to it, she had thought that she had customized a list. And then when we asked the lender who was supposedly putting the properties together for especially her request, had never even looked the inside of the property. And one of her requests was that they'd be light fixers.
Right.
So if you don't look at the inside of a house, it's really hard to tell what needs to be done.
Exactly. I think you had people on both sides trying to put something together that didn't really have any control over it. I think a lot of people were offering these bulk buys that really didn't have control over it. They were just trying to entice people to make an offer, and then they were going to maybe take that to the banks themselves. So I just don't think a lot of people had control over the bulk buys, at least not as much as they thought they did.
Was it common for someone thinking about a bulk buy that they would just simply get rid of the inventory to other investors as opposed to fix it and resell it to people?
Yeah, one of the things in this market is the exit strategy. And I hear when we do boot camps, I ask people to raise their hands if they're going to sell it to other investors. And interestingly enough, almost 9 out of 10 people raise their hands. So I'm just a little concerned who they're going to sell. You know,
they're all the same guy.
Yeah, they're all going to look at each other and say, I got one too. I want to sell it to you.
Okay.
So I think people that develop exit strategies, pricing strategies that work, are going to be the ones that are really going to benefit, because I think people just over the last 5 years, they think buying has been so hard that that's still in their mind as an investor.
Mm-hmm.
But as we know, when we met 15 years ago, I mean, the buying part was actually easy.
Yes.
It was those who had exit strategies that could keep buying and turning them over that I think we're able to create the most profit.
What advice would you give to investors so they can profit over the next 3 years as lender-owned properties dominate this business?
Well, I think really just patience for one thing, doing their research. Just one of my lines that I always tell people is you'll find what you look for. Just know what you want to buy and start looking for that, and you'll find it.
Okay.
Don't just accept something just because you think it's a deal. It's just amazing how many calls I get where after just 30 seconds I'm thinking, why would you even consider that a deal? In other words, but they're just like things are finding them in a way. I think if they just look for what they want to do, make sure they have a good exit strategy in place, and they don't. Another thing, too, I think it's important for people not to overbuy right now, because it's going to be very easy to buy houses. I know people don't believe that, but it really is going to be easy. Just because you buy a house at, say, 60 cents on the dollar, you still have to make repairs, you have to make monthly payments, and you just can't afford to get in a situation where you're bogged down because of lack of cash. So I think you need to just treat it like a retail business, and you just need to make sure that you're turning over that inventory also.
That's great advice. Greg, you've been preparing for auctions for probably the last 4 months. How many properties did you and Andrea physically go see for preparing for that last auction, would you say?
A little over 300.
A little over 300. What's the process of preparation for going? What do you do before you go to see the property? What do you know about that property before you go see it?
Well, typically we'll pull it up on the MLS, try to determine some type of value.
Are most of them listed? Do we have the luxury of that?
Yes, most of them are listed.
Okay.
So you can get a good idea of, right off the picture, really, what kind of home and inventory you're dealing with.
How accurate has that been? I mean, do you have any recollection of what you thought you'd see and then it was different when you got there?
It's pretty accurate.
Pretty accurate, okay.
I mean, there were a few surprises. You never know when somebody's going to destroy the inside of the house, and typically these REO agents are only giving you one picture of the exterior, so you do have to go see every single one of them.
Do you evaluate the property as far as the range that you think it's going to be worth before
Yes.
you go?
Before we go, we do. And a lot of times that's because some of these auctions are setting minimum bids. So instead of wasting your time going and seeing a bunch of property that you know the minimum bid is too high to begin with, you just don't bother to go see it. If you know you evaluate it and you know that your numbers are at least somewhat accurate, you can get a pretty good feel as to whether or not you even have a chance of buying that property.
When you appraise a property for what we're going to end up selling it for, how much weight do you put on comps?
Well, it's changing. Comps are starting to be more relevant because they're starting to tell you where the market's really at. 6 to 7 months ago, they were completely worthless. You really had to know what you were competing against.
Okay.
So it's changing, and I think it will continue to change.
So you're still paying attention to listings because those are causing still some price declines, and that's your competition that you're going to have to sell against. But you're thinking the sales now are at a low enough range where they too could be representative of what you're going to end up getting as well?
I think as the market starts to flatten out, it will be more and more relevant.
Absolutely.
Right now, as it's falling, right now, like in Moreno Valley, we're starting to see so many REO inventory listings that a lot of them are not fixed up. So you can't use that as a retail value. Before,
right.
you would pick the bottom number, and you may even be 5% below that as your retail number because there just weren't any sales. There was no data whatsoever to support an actual sale price.
Everybody was just asking, but no one was committing
right.
on the other side.
Nobody was getting the sale.
Okay.
So right now, we're starting to see sales It's becoming tougher to evaluate what a property's worth because you really have to get into the MLS, look at some of the pictures, and try to figure out who has actually got the repaired value, and that's becoming more challenging.
Okay. If you go see 300 houses, how long are you physically in a house?
Well, it depends on how close they're together and how many of them they give me in an area, but I mean, 5 minutes.
5 minutes in a house to do a repair estimate of, yes, 20,000 sometimes.
Right.
How accurate can you possibly be?
We did pretty good.
You did?
we were probably within, actually we were a little high, but not much, probably $1,000 a property average.
Right. So you were actually, your estimate of the properties that we ended up buying was actually exceeded what the real cost was. Of repairing.
It appears so. We haven't closed yet.
Okay. Does that, where that construction background really helps? I mean, you've become very systematic in what we're able to do and the repairs. So that's just been a big asset.
I think the estimating background that I have has probably helped the most. Construction, you don't really get to, you know, you can do construction all your life and not really understand the numbers.
Okay.
It's when you do the estimating that really starts to help.
You've attended auctions now for 3 or 4 months, maybe more. Have you noticed a change in the attitude of who's attending and what they're willing to buy?
Definitely. At the last Touch in the Marshall auction, I think they had 5 different auctions at 5 different locations. I think at least a couple of them, I was seeing probably a third to half of the bids be what I would consider a wholesale deal. What a typical wholesale buyer would think is a deal.
Okay.
Right now, I think those margins are still kind of slim, but they were buying at about a 20% discount.
You had an interesting experience at an auction where it was a Fannie Mae sale, where the auctioneer was raising the prices, and apparently he didn't have a bidder on the other side of that price increase.
Williams and Williams.
Yes, we did. Yeah. They said that they had an outside investor that was willing to pay more for the property, and they said that they were bidding on his behalf. When I pursued that option so that I could have that same deal, so I could have the same privilege, all of a sudden, you know, that wasn't really available to me because I wasn't one of their regular buyers.
And we never found the secret process to become one of their regular buyers either.
I was let known very, after a lot of prodding, that I wasn't going to get that privilege.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sure that was the lender was the ultimate bidder, you know, not wanting. It was a reserve auction, and they didn't want to take it.
Right.
You've attended some various companies now. That you've attended an REDC auction, Hudson & Marshall auction, Williams & Williams. I don't know if you've attended a Kennedy Wilson. I think you have. Do you have a preference in why that would be?
You know, I think it was really the market more than anything. I think REDC got into the market early, so it was a little frustrating to going to their auctions because they were all going for very high prices. Mm-hmm. But I don't think REDC has any magic in what they do. I think they're probably the most well-put-together auctions that I've seen. But at the same time, I don't think they can avoid what the market's about ready to do to them. And I think all auctions will be good as soon as the banks start getting real on what they're going to get.
There was an auction over the weekend. We hadn't talked about this, but it was a third of it was absolute. And they auctioned off the absolute properties first and canceled the rest of the auction. So apparently the absolute number was nowhere close to what they thought they were going to get.
Mm.
Those were condos in, I think it was in Van Nuys, and there wasn't any listing in the MLS under, say, 220,
mm-hmm.
and there wasn't a sale that went over 135. So
wow.
The market was saying, I don't think we want condos. Now, those would rent to for something like $1,100.
So it's close to cash flow.
Yep. So that's definitely starting to occur. So auctioneers definitely have their work cut out for them because they're going to be feeding on the same audience too many times. And that's really going to be a big opportunity. So that word absolute is going to be exciting. And then it's a hustle business, and that's, we know how to do that pretty well. So I'm excited about that. What are the types of properties that you're trying to stay away from? So it's a good deal, but you go, because of those deficiencies, I don't think we're going to do that.
Well, we probably try to stay away from anything that would just be such a negative that we think somebody would choose to go elsewhere. I mean, in the last radio show, we talked about deficiencies, like backing a freeway or a railroad or something that would be of extreme nuisance. With how much inventory there is out there, we're definitely seeing that we need to just stay away from certain inventory that is just probably no one's going to choose at any price because they have better options.
Or there's too many. I mean, how many 3,000 or 4,000 square foot houses are there going to be? I mean, how do you get your 4,000 square foot house in attention when there's 25 other ones?
Right.
I guess it would be strictly price, you know.
It's strictly price. It's so basically, you've got to be the best value and somebody's got to choose you. And it's becoming harder. I mean, if you've got everyone's budget's a little tight right now. Why would you choose a 3,000 square foot house when you could go buy a 2,000 square foot house and save a lot of money? I mean, $100,000 paying on taxes every year starts adding up.
Yeah, it's interesting how the philosophy changes. And when you have a boom, everyone wants to get 4,000 square feet because that's the when you have a price bump on a 4,000 square foot house, you make more money.
Right.
And then in a downturn, you get stuck with you paying utilities. For a downturn, that's not so hot.
No.
Okay. Andre, you've now got the burden of selling what we're buying. And that's becoming a challenge because the nature of the market is changing very rapidly. So when you're preparing to price properties, what are you paying attention to? And I know you've been talking to agents that are successfully selling properties. What seems to be the blueprint of the buyer that's out there?
I think the buyer's agents that I've been speaking to a lot have continuously said the same thing because I've been asking them, what are your buyers looking for? And I hear the same two words, price and condition. So buyers now know that they have a lot of choices, that they have a lot of inventory. They want a house that is in good condition or very good condition, and they want it to be priced extremely well because they feel that they're entitled to a deal.
Entitled. Okay.
And they also feel that right now sellers need to be paying concessions. So they want their closing costs paid or part of their closing costs paid. So I think when we're looking at an exit strategy for the properties that we're purchasing, we have to really take into consideration the mindset of the buyer that we have out there now, and that buyer is feeling entitled.
Well, you know, what's interesting is you wonder who that buyer is. Let's say if they're a first-time buyer now, you wonder how they avoided being a buyer in 05 when qualifying was so much easier. We've talked about this where I think we've kind of stolen buyers from 08 and 09 that would have matured and been ready, and they're probably already in something and hammered. So this new buyer probably doesn't have a background of owning a home 50% of the time.
I agree with that. We are not seeing what we would call, you and I would call, a move-up buyer.
Right.
That is not the person that we are now wanting to sell our properties to. And I think that we're having a buyer now that is much more sophisticated than you and I have ever seen, especially in the 90s. They are very computer savvy. They're going to surf the internet. They know what they're looking for, and now they're basically finding that and then letting their agent know that's representing them versus, you know, in the old days, as I like to call it, it was the agents that we kind of took down the specifications for what they were looking for, did our searches, and then picked homes to go and show them.
Do you think the typical buyer is nervous during escrow? And they're like, they don't want to hear one more negative thing?
I love to use the term hand-holding, and I think that was something in the 90s that we had to do. We had to handhold our buyers and walk them through because a lot of them were first-time buyers. But I think this time it will be magnified simply because they're on the internet. They're seeing the deals that are coming up on a daily basis. And now they're questioning, oh, should I stay in this escrow? Because this one just came up three doors down and now it's a better price.
You know, one of the things you said that was interesting is that they're being very picky about the repairs being done, that type of thing. And I haven't seen the REO inventory go to that extent yet. And I think that might play into our hands at an auction. That retail buyer may not want to do the paint and carpet. He maybe doesn't have the money for it. And so they want that to be financed in the purchase. So that gives us a big advantage if we buy in the as-is stuff.
I really think it does give us a big advantage because I think the buyer that we're going to be seeing now is going to be a first-time buyer, most likely going to be getting an FHA loan now. And FHA has requirements that properties have to have certain requirements in order for them to get an FHA loan. So I think for us, a great exit strategy is to buy these properties and to rehab them and have them in great condition.
Well, I guess we've run out of time. Thank you all for joining me the last couple of weeks. And we're looking forward to a great 2008 in either buying the properties or funding other wholesale deals. So thanks again.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
catch Bruce Norris discussing the California real estate market Thursday, January 10th at the Real Wealth Expo in San Diego, and later that same evening at the Orange County Real Estate Investors Forum in Irvine. Bruce will also be teaching his California-only Investors Essentials course all day January 13th in conjunction with the Real Wealth Expo. Visit thenorrisgroup.com for more details.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week here on News Talk 590 KTIE.